The Book Nook on WYSO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Good morning. You are listening to WYSO in Yellow Springs. Stay tuned. We've got the Book Nook coming up for you, following National Public Radio news headlines. And today, Kathy Reed returns to the show. She's written a prequel to her first novel, featuring her sleuth, Annie Fillmore. Annie is running a video store. The year is 1990. It's in Southwest Ohio. Someone returns a video with something strange on it. We'll be talking to Kathy Reed, coming up following the news. Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Joining me on the program today, returning to the program, is Kathy Reed. Her new novel is Trouble for Rent. She joins us on the telephone from somewhere in Southwest Ohio. Where are you, Kathy?
I'm in Mainville, which actually is Landon. It's kind of around Kings Island.
Beautiful Mainville, Ohio.
It is. I always think of it as Cincinnati, but, you know, that's because I'm from New York.
Gotcha. Well, we had you on for your debut novel, and can we now say that you're writing a series? Because this, even though this seems like a prequel, you've got some of the same characters.
I do, and it is a series, and this is definitely a prequel. This takes place in 1990, whereas Banking for Trouble took place in 2013. Luckily, Annie has not aged a bit, so that's all good. But yes, and I've already started on number three, so it is going to have the same group of characters in it, with who I'm beginning to like more and more.
That's one of the beautiful things about this genre, is your sleuth doesn't have to age in real time.
It's not the best.
It's wonderful. Well, let's talk about the first book then briefly, and then we'll segue into the prequel. Okay, the first book, Annie is working in the banking industry in Cincinnati. Do you want to give us a little snapshot of the story?
Yes, she's Annie was a mortgage loan officer, and she came in one day to the mortgage bank and found one of the glass cubes was filled with black balloons, and soon to find out there were a pair of shoes under it. So what happened was they discovered that one of the that their boss was dead. And she goes with a couple of her friends. She tries to figure out, because she's nosy, she kind of tries to figure out what happened. And by that time, since it is, that was, you know, further down, she's already had several murders in my mind. And, so she's kind of used to sleuthing, and she finds out with the help of her friend Marilyn Monroe, née Klotzman, and her other friend Sophie Sugarman, they kind of unearth who the murderer is and how it happened, how somebody was found murdered in a closed door under black balloons.
Yeah, the closed room mystery. And one of the beautiful things about that story that I recall was that nobody liked the boss, so the list of potential suspects was rather long.
Was everybody, yes.
Right. And so now we have flashed back, and from my previous conversation with you, I seem to recall that you used to run what is now kind of a forgotten type of business, and that was a video rental store. Isn't that correct?
Didn't That's you used right. To run it was a video – and I actually did own a video rental store and sold music. And I actually started this book – back then. So you can imagine that was an awfully long time ago. But because life overtook me and I had to make a dollar, I just never finished it. So I finished it now.
So you went back to it, and it became a prequel because it came out after the first book. And now we're going back to 1990. And When we think about the whole video store culture, Annie is running a video store in a very cutely named community. Do you want to tell us the name of the community?
Briarton?
Yeah, Briarton. That's a cute name.
I was brought up in Briarcliff Manor, which is a suburb of New York City, so I didn't want to say Briarcliff, and I didn't want to say where actually the video store was, but I'm glad your mind works that way.
Well, I came here from another place myself, and I learned that there's a certain derogatory term here in this area that is in the name of your town, and I thought maybe I thought maybe it was a play on that. Okay, so let's talk about that forgotten culture that Annie is very much a part of, and I'm sure that you remember very well that the whole video store culture. Do you remember that? How wonderful that was?
Oh, it was. I was just I just absolutely loved it. It was the best because I'm a huge movie buff. So what could be better? I had every single movie I ever wanted at my fingertips. And it was a wonderful culture. People, it was like for a while there before the big guys came in, before the big box stores came in, it was like you would only have one copy of the latest hit. So whoever got in the store first and got that hit, it was like, they'd won the lottery. It was so much fun. And I had really wonderful, wonderful customers. I was very fortunate. And I'm sure a lot of people who own video stores would say the same thing. But I still have friends who are my customers.
Yeah, that was the age of the mom-and-pop video store.
Yeah.
And as your story opens, Annie is in her mom-and-pop video store, and she's just doing the mundane, everyday kind of business. People are returning videos. People are paying fines. She's got competition just down the road from another video store. And I love this character because she's one of these wisecracking characters. You've always got her making these cute little observations.
Yes, kind of. I mean, I think that kind of makes the book fun. So it's a comic mystery. I hope so. She has an opinion about everything, unfortunately.
Are we allowed to talk about this video that's returned? It's right at the beginning. I don't think
it's
a spoiler.
So I think that's okay.
I mean, you really set up the whole story with this.
Yes, this comes right out, like in the first chapter, certainly, is that she has a Cinderella tape returned to her by a customer, Essie Plank, and over which has been videotaped what Annie thinks certainly looks like a murder to her. And when she calls the police, they say, yeah, it's not a murder. It's just it's their play acting. It's kind of, kind of suburban porn. I didn't use that word, but that's good. They just make no mind of it. They think it's just a baloney. But once she shows her friend Marilyn, they both think that this is the real deal and that this is a dead body. And how can they just let this go? There's a dead woman on the floor. So that's how it starts.
And the woman who returns the tape, Annie has to bribe her with a couple of free rental passes to try to placate her. But it's clear that she's not the customer who taped over it, that she has to go back into her records on her computer to look at who's rented this video. And it's also there's a liability issue here because this woman could cause a litigation for this outrage of, something that her kids might have seen.
Right. Yes. So, that's one of Annie's first things. Oh, my gosh, there's going to be a lawsuit, and I don't have any money. Like most video store owners back then, you're living, it's just a little tiny operation. And she's not quite sure that this little girl has been traumatized or it's just a crime of opportunity by the people returning it. They, as it turns out, that's kind of how it works out. But and also because Disney used to take those videos out of circulation, so it was like, oh my gosh, even worse maybe that I can't get another copy of Cinderella.
I see. So you really know the nuts and bolts of this business. Now, tell
me. I was in it for a long time.
Tell me about the music side of this, because I don't remember video stores having music as well.
Well, I don't think every music store, every video store did, but when I first opened it, it was a tiny little store around the corner from where it ended up. And we, when we moved up to a strip mall next to a Kroger, we felt like we had to broaden our base a little bit and add something to it. And so the music was was terrific. And I learned a lot about music right back then too, which I really loved, because I think you probably remember a lot of those groups and that music that I mentioned in there, Jesus and Mary Chain, the Echo and the Bunnymen, you know, all of that kind of 1980s. I don't know what you would call it. They're all English, but there were others. And so it was really fun because I attracted a kind of a different kind of clientele for the music as I did for the videos.
I would call it 1980s.
And
I remember it very well, as you say, because back in the early 1980s, I was managing a record store, and I was there when the dreaded compact disc reared its ugly head.
I assumed
you must have had compact discs at your store.
Oh, we did. Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things about a rental store, nothing was live. The videos were all behind the counter. But the music was all live. Oh, my gosh. It was, come and get your free music.
Right. Well, you've dedicated your book to someone who obviously is very dear to you, and I figured out from this dedication that this gentleman inspired your character by the same name.
Yes.
And this Neil in your book is the one who helps Annie with her music.
Correct.
Tell us about Neil the character.
Well, he was based on a real character that I knew and that who did work for me. And he was an interesting guy, very, very funny. This Neil in the book is an idealized version of him, but he did have a great sense of humor, and he did know music very, very well, and introduced me to that 80s music, which I didn't know at all until that time, until he started buying it for the store. So he was, an interesting guy, kind of at loose ends, and you know, unsurprisingly, like a lot of people who weren't doing the mainstream thing, he was very smart and very wise, but he didn't capitalize on it in the way of that most people do, or that a lot of people do. And so we were close friends for a long time. And sadly, he passed away in 2013, and he was, you know, young. So it was a tragedy, and of course, when I first met him, he said, you should write a story about this. I said, well, what would I do? What would I write about? He said, embellish. So I did.
Well, in your dedication, you write that he would have said, Kathy, are you the person who wrote Banking on Trouble? I must be honest. I read it. I thought it was poor. Now, was he hypercritical like that?
No, that's a quote from Woody Allen's Midsummer Night's sex comedy.
Okay.
And when that guy said that in the, I'm trying to think of who it was now, I can't remember it, when he said that line in the movie, and we were watching it at the store, he was laughing so hard, I thought, well, I think it's funny, but he's going to fall over laughing. So I remember that incident, and I thought, oh, that would be perfect to say that.
Appropriately, it's a movie reference.
Yes.
Well, in both books, Neil is also in the first book, and
yes.
And he's in this prequel. There's a romantic thing between them. It's not really consummated much, but it's definitely a romantic thing.
Yeah. Yes, I think that, you know, as in real life, sometimes things happen that, you know, what you wouldn't call is an appropriate age difference, or appropriate for whatever other reasons, you know, two men, two women, well, that's appropriate now, but whatever. And that was, in the book, Annie, you know, they obviously have an attraction for one another, and he wants to consummate this attraction than she does, because, you know, she feels like she's not as open as he is about these things. And so she feels reluctant because, you know, after all, she's a mother. How could she do anything so ribald? But anyway,
yeah.
So that's kind of that also kind of flows through the book, too. And I like that, too, that, you know, that there's another element to it.
There's a romantic tension. And
yes, definitely a romantic tension.
And Annie's older than Neil, and he gives her poetry.
Yes.
It's very sweet.
Yes. And that was true. He did write poetry. And I thought he was a great – I liked his poetry. He had a he had a gift, but he just didn't use it, which was sad.
It's the Book Nook on WYSO. I'll continue my conversation with Kathy Reed right after this. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. You're listening to the Book Nook. My guest today is Kathy Reed, returning to the program with her new novel, Trouble for Rent. And as it opens, you give us a good view of Annie's ideals. She's decided to leave Cincinnati because in 1990 she felt that it was becoming sort of an intolerant place, and you cite some examples that I think some of our listeners will recall, particularly an exhibition of photos that outraged some Americans.
Yes, the Mapplethorpe exhibit, and it was I think it was nationwide, that Cincinnati, the light was on Cincinnati. What were they going to do about this? And because it was, everybody was up in arms, and I had gone to that exhibit, and it was just, it was, you could see who was for it and who was it against it. But, and then, of course, then there was the Dennis Berry court, they sued him and the Cincinnati, the Contemporary Art Center, for pornography, which it was proved in the courts that it wasn't. So, really, that was a feather in Cincinnati's cap. I thought that they did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a time also where there was a group of right-wing Christians, I would say, a group that, they came out against, they would go to video stores. And the one thing that was true in the story in the book is that one day I was there and this woman came in and started taking all the Playboy and the Penthouse videos off. I didn't have X-rated videos. I didn't want to. But there were other movies that were prurient, a little bit. Not X-rated, but R-rated, and she took everything that she thought was not family-oriented and put them on the counter. And I don't know what the heck she was doing. And then it comes out that she was from the church, and she said, if you take all these videos off here, I'll tell the congregation to come and visit your store. So that was,
That really happened?
That really happened, and that was kind of the tenor of the community at that time, I think. Not only the small community where I had my video store, but I think of all of Cincinnati with the Mapplethorpe thing. I think we've come a long way from there.
And you have a woman in your story who, as you just described, does kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. That was such an eye opener for me. I thought, my goodness, I cannot believe somebody would do this. But that kind of made me think of the story.
Kathy Reed joins us. Her book is Trouble for Rent. Let's talk about the fact that Annie is a sleuth, but that the police don't really want her snooping. And the police in this one, the local police at least, they're kind of like the Keystone Cops.
Yeah, well, of course, that's fiction, because I'm sure that those police were great. But it sets up the story that she has to go and do it herself, because Detective Smathers is not about to take this on. I don't, she doesn't know if why he doesn't think it's important that she sees what appears to be a dead person, but he doesn't. He thinks it's just fluff.
Kathy, do you have your book handy there? Would you want to read a little segment
Sure.
for our listeners? Because I think it'd be really great for them to be able to hear how you write.
Absolutely. I'd love to. What should I start?
Just pick something that you're comfortable with reading, as long as it's not, you know, pornographic.
Did you read something pornographic in there?
I'm kidding.
Would you like me to? I think maybe I'll just read the beginning.
Do that.
Okay. Chapter 1. The crack of the video cassette on the faux oak formica counter startled me back from Prairie Stop on Highway 41, where Cary Grant was attempting to outrun a low-flying crop duster. "Hi, just returning?" I asked. The customer's blonde, over-permed hair was in need of a wire brush, and her pink sweatshirt with a smiling bunny didn't match her mood. Annie's Video and Music Hall was ready for business, but the hospitable aroma of buttered popcorn and the showy colored posters featuring larger-than-life photos of Tom Cruise and Julia Roberts now seemed like cheap funhouse decor as the woman glowered across the counter at me. "Something's wrong with this show," she growled. "Did you try your tracking?" "Not tracking," she said with a frown. "What seems to be the problem?" I asked. "The problem seems to be there is a porno movie in the middle of Cinderella. The problem is one minute Emmy is singing along with Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo, and the next minute she's crying her little heart out." More?
Sure.
The customer reached out and placed one sweaty palm on the upside-down U of brass tubing extending out of the counter that was supposed to replicate an old-fashioned ticker window. I had just finished polishing it and could smell Brasso mingling with the now sickening smell of popcorn. I checked the video in on the computer and found this was customer 14231, better known to the world as Essie Plank. A double whammy. Not only a Cinderella on moratorium, meaning they have taken the title out of circulation, I couldn't buy a replacement copy. But a little girl was traumatized. The video store owner's worst fear, lawsuit, lit up on the marquee of my mind in blazing pink neon. "I'm sorry, Mrs. Plank. Please take these two free rental tickets for your trouble." She grabbed them from my hand so quickly that she missed and they fluttered to the bright blue carpet below. When she finally distinguished the real tickets from the picture of tickets adorning the carpet, she smiled triumphantly. A seemingly placated Essie Plank left through the front door, which was ringed with cheerful white chase lights.
Hmm. That's Kathy Reed reading from the opening to Trouble for Rent. Actually, there's a prologue, but we mentioned
yes,
that.
Yes, there was a prologue.
That's chapter one, and Annie's Video Store is open for business, and we are getting a good flashback to, it's hard to believe it's been almost 30 years ago that we had
Me too. I can't believe it either. It seems like yesterday.
Well, I'm glad that you sat on this manuscript and you put it out second. I'm assuming that you went back and you did a lot of polishing on that old manuscript. If you did it after the first book, is that?
I hadn't really gotten that far. I think I had written maybe the first chapter, really. And so I think hopefully my writing was, you know, I think practice helps. So hopefully this book is a little bit more polished than the first. But I sure enjoyed writing it. It was fun because, as you said, it was nice to write about my friend Neil and also my mothers, who not really weren't my mothers, but my mother was Helen and my aunt was Em. And to bring them into the story was really a treat for me because they are both gone, of course. And so that was, you know, it was really quite lovely.
Okay, tell us about these two ladies.
Well, in the book, Annie has two mothers because her parents were killed when she was three, and these two aunts, who she calls Mom, just came to their rescue and brought her up. And they are two, like, they're just delightful, but they're a little wacky because they don't really believe in witchcraft, but they're metaphysically inclined. So they believe one of them particularly can see when Annie's in trouble and will call her and say, "What's going on? There's darkness around you." So they have played a part in this book because they have, they've kind of helped her out a little bit with, finding who did this.
Mm-hmm.
And not exactly, I mean, she found out, but they kind of give her hints. And, I just think they you know, add a lot of goofiness to it, because they're so, you know, they go to church, yet they believe in witch, you know, some, a little bit of witchcraft. So they're kind of an all, you know, they're kind of, they believe in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about, I love that, because I think that, that it, you know, it helps her out, and it's kind of funny.
Well, both books have a lot of humor. Annie is a very funny person, and obviously that comes from you. And I liked Banking on Trouble, but I can clearly see, I had the opportunity to read your manuscript before you published the second book, and I appreciated that a lot.
Well, I did appreciate you doing it. Thank you.
I could see your development as a writer, and I think the second book, I think you've really come a long way.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Oh, my goodness, that makes me feel great. Hopefully I have, and I feel a little, starting the third one, I feel a little sense of more of a flow instead of like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to say now?
Okay. You going to give us a little snapshot preview of the third book? Is it developed enough that you're willing to even talk about it?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's not developed enough. It's developed in my mind. I still haven't figured out all of the ins and outs of it, but the crux of it is that Annie is invited to a convention by her video distributor, Wonderly Entertainment, which is, I'm not sure exactly where it's going to be, but it's going to be probably between Ohio and Kentucky. And she goes there. It's a three-day convention, and she decides to stay there instead of driving home every single night. And the first thing she does when she gets into the goes into her hotel, she suspects that there's a murder.
Mm.
And I mean, I've got the ins and outs of that, but I won't say now, because it could change dramatically.
Sure.
once I start getting it, really into it.
Did you used to go to these kinds of conventions when you were in the video business?
I did. I was the president of the VSDA here in Southern Ohio and Northern Kentucky, and I would go out to Las Vegas once a year. They had the huge conventions. That's book number four. But I did. I had a distributor, Waxworks, Video Works, and that was in Owensboro, Kentucky, and they had conventions down there, and I would go down there, and that was great fun. I mean, it was always fun to meet other video store owners who, you know, as you can well imagine, there's some humor right there.
Well, you have a Kinsey Millhone reference near the end of the book, which I was a tip of the hat to Sue Grafton, who,
yes, indeed,
is putting out her second-to-last Kinsey Millhone in the alphabet this month. And I thought that was appropriate, since your book is set in 1990, and I think that the last Kinsey Millhone will end probably right on the last day of 1989, since they're all set in the
Oh, my gosh, how wonderful 80s. To have any kind of connection with Sue Grafton.
Well, yeah, we could hope, huh?
We can hope, yeah.
Well, we've had her.
She's definitely a master.
We've had her on the show several times, and this new book's coming out at the end of August, and I don't know if we can get her back for that, but
she's delightful. I've heard her on YouTube. I have never heard her in person, but I think she seems like a delightful person, and from Louisville.
That's right. I'll have to send you a link to our podcast.
Oh, please!
For our
yes,
most
love,
recent
love
interview
that.
With Sue,
yeah.
Which was a couple of years ago. Well, Kathy, it's really exciting that your new book has come out, and are you getting any kind of early response? What are people saying?
A lot of people have let me know that they really like it, and I thought it was great, and, you know, they enjoyed the laughs, and one of my readers said, and I didn't know who it was till the very last, which was good. I was glad to hear that. That makes me feel good. But yes, because it was really a fun book to write, and I hope that came across.
I think so. Lots of twists and turns, and a great cover.
Isn't it wonderful? Maybe I shouldn't say it, but I didn't do it, and the person who did the first cover couldn't do it. So she had a friend, and her name is Marina Kajanova, and I think she did a great job. I love it.
I love it too. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for returning to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Vic. It was my pleasure.
Don't go away. Coming up in our final segment of the Book Nook this morning, a very special Book Nook bonus. I'm going to bring you my very first author interview ever on WYSO. That's coming up following this. Good morning. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. It's the Book Nook and a special Book Nook bonus in this final segment of the program this morning. People ask me now and then how I started talking to authors on the radio. How did this happen? Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll make it as brief as possible. I moved to Yellow Springs back in 1993, and I immediately discovered this wonderful radio station at 91.3 on my dial. And so I got up my courage and called up the station, and the phone was answered by Ruth Yellowhawk, and she said, "Sure, come on over. Let's talk about radio," because I told her that I had a background in radio. I had done 10 years worth of music programming back in my hometown of Des Moines. So I came over, and Ruth said, "Great, we'll let you fill in for some of our volunteer hosts." And so I did, and I did my first program on WYSO, filling in for somebody in June of 1993. Back then, if you listened to the station, we had classical music shows hosted by volunteers in the morning, and then in the afternoon, the program Afternoon Excursions, eclectic music selections, hosted at the time Monday through Friday by various staff members. One day you'd hear the station manager hosting it, the next day the music director, the next day the office manager. Well, by early 1994, I had taken over that slot. I was hosting Afternoon Excursions Monday through Friday. And now and then I would get phone calls, and they would say, "Yeah, we have an author coming through Dayton. Can you interview our author on your radio show?" And I'd say, "No, I don't think so. I have a music show. Why on earth would I want to talk to an author? That has nothing to do with me." I kept getting these calls. These authors kept coming through Dayton. Well, finally, I said to myself, "You know, I like books. Maybe I should talk to one of these authors." In September of 1994, I finally woke up to the fact that it might be kind of fun to interview authors on WYSO. So I agreed to do an interview. The publisher sent me a book. I read it. I had never heard of the author. It was a science fiction novel. I liked it. I arranged to talk to the author. She called me. This was back at our old studios in the Antioch College Student Union. And I talked to her for about 8 minutes. I didn't know anything about her. Now, you need to try to remember back in those days, in September 1994, WYSO didn't have a website. Most of us didn't even know what the internet was. I had never sent an email. I didn't have an email address. That was all in the future. There was no Google to look up this author and get information. And frankly, I didn't prepare for the interview in any way except by reading the book. Well, as you can tell by listening to my very first interview with an author on WYSO, I didn't know very much about this extremely famous writer who I was interviewing. And you can tell during the conversation that I was just kind of making my own way, trying to figure out what to say next, talking about the book, talking about her work. I was poorly informed. I clearly wasn't a fan. And she tolerated me. She put up with it. Her name was Anne McCaffrey. That's right. The great science fiction writer, the legendary Anne McCaffrey, was coming to Dayton, Ohio. And I did an interview with her, and I mentioned her book signing a few times during the interview. And I enjoyed it. And after that, I thought, I'm going to do another one. And so I did another interview about a month later, and I liked it. I was a little better prepared, so I kept doing it. And finally, my colleague, Ann Williams, she said, you know, if you're going to be talking to authors on the radio, maybe you should have a name for your program. I said, well, that's a great idea, Ann. Ann was into structure. She liked to have things be organized. So the next author I interviewed, I was sitting there in the studio. I thought, what am I going to call the show? Well, it's kind of a comfortable little nook. The author and I get to sit there and talk about books. So I thought, I'm just going to call it the Book Nook. And there we had it. We had a name. And we were still doing random interviews at random times during my music program. And then Anne, who, as I mentioned, really likes structure, she said, you know, maybe you should do your show at a regular time every day so listeners will know that you're going to be talking to an author at a certain time of the day. And I thought, gee, that's a great idea. Okay, let's see if we can do that. Well, we did. And so at 2 o'clock on weekday afternoons, I brought you the Book Nook. And right now I'm going to bring you that very first interview that I ever did with an author. Here's Anne McCaffrey, recorded in September of 1994. We're speaking with Anne McCaffrey, the well-known science fiction writer, and we're going to be talking about her new books that have just been released, including a collaboration with Elizabeth Ann Scarborough, the second one, I believe, called Power Lines.
That's right.
And we also have a new book from you, don't we?
You do, indeed.
Is that the Dolphins of Pern?
That's right.
And this is the first Pern book in, what, 3 years, I believe?
No, is it?
Is that?
2 years. All the Wares of Pern was what? No, the Chronicles of Pern was last year.
Okay. I guess my information wasn't up to date here.
Well, no, I just write so many books you can't keep up with
them. Okay. Well, welcome to Ohio. And why don't you tell us about this latest collaboration between you and Elizabeth Ann Scarborough, Power Lines?
Well, it's the second in the Powers of Bee series, Tatebi, our Arctic planet that is sentient, and is laying down laws as to what people may and may not do on it.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean when you say the planet is sentient?
The planet is intelligent and understands that it has people on it and prefers that they do what it wants them to do instead of gouging holes and digging things up and generally being unpleasant the way some people are on planets.
Uh-huh. And this is your second collaboration with Elizabeth Ann Scarborough. I understand you live in Ireland and she lives in Washington State.
Yes, but she usually comes and stays with me when we're writing.
I see.
She did research the first year on the book that she was putting together on music, and I was doing another book, and we sort of got talking about doing a book between the pair of us.
Oh, okay. Well, I just finished it last night.
Oh, good.
And it struck me that cats are really major characters in this book. I assume you must be a cat lover?
We both are.
Okay. Do you really feel that they communicate with humans by telepathy like they do in the book?
Well, not like they do in the book, but they sure can make themselves understood.
Okay. As I read the book, I felt that there were a lot of parallels between, is it Tatebi? Is that the name of the planet?
That is right.
Okay.
Tatebi.
I felt that there were a lot of parallels being drawn between that planet and our own planet as far as the company Intergal wanted to come into Tatebi and basically take the valuable minerals and remove all these things, and the planet being sentient did not approve of this going on.
That's right.
And I really felt that there were a lot of parallels between Tatebi and Earth. Was this intentional?
Of course.
Okay.
Why write a book? Okay. Not to prove something and show how other ways you can do it.
Okay. There were some very intriguing characters, particularly Sean Shangili.
Yeah, Shangili, yeah.
Okay. He was half man and, is it, half seal?
Well, he's a Selkie.
Okay.
And when they're on land, they're human, and when they're in the water, they're soapy, they're seals.
Okay.
That's an old Celtic legend.
I see. There were a lot of Celtic influences woven through this book, as I imagine there are through a lot of your books. A lot of the names of places and the names of people, I thought, had a Celtic ring to them.
It also has a very Eskimo ring to it.
Ah, okay.
Shangeli is not an Irish name. Sean is, but Shangeli is Eskimo.
Oh.
And so is Sinangatuk.
You're a veteran of this field. Would you describe your writing as science fiction or more fantasy?
Oh, no, my writing is definitely science fiction.
Okay. What was it like to break through as a successful writer in what was formerly a male-dominated field when you first got started? Was that difficult?
Well, I got so fed up in the 50s and 60s with the way women were portrayed in books that I wrote one in which the girl had all the answers.
Uh-huh.
And it was a send-up, a deliberate one, and people at first didn't realize that I was having fun with them and said McCaffrey really should not use quite so many old science fiction cliches and should try for newer, fresher ideas. Come on, fellas, don't you know when you are having your leg pulled?
Well, you do have some very strong female characters, and
well,
particularly
why not?
Particularly in this book.
The weak ones are no fun at all.
I really enjoyed it, and I can see why your readers do. Science fiction readers are an eclectic group. Have you ever experienced fans who perhaps went a little overboard with their devotion to you as a writer?
Yes. I've had women come up to me and burst into tears because they never thought they'd meet Anne McCaffrey.
Oh, my.
I find that very off-putting.
And you've really been on quite a tour. You were just in Winnipeg?
Yes. We had the 52nd World Science Fiction Convention. There were 3,500 attending members, and 5,242, I think the figure was, non-attending.
Oh, my.
So it was a big convention.
I'm assuming that you have another collaboration in the works with Elizabeth.
Oh, we finished that before we came on this trip.
Okay. Any hint as to what that one's about?
Well, obviously there were quite a few people who did not want to give up control of the planet and tried to make things very difficult for Yana and Bunny. And that the story deals with how we finally get Batebi set up as an entity on its own right.
Okay. And you also have the new Pern book out.
Yes, The Dolphins of Pern.
And this has been a very popular series for you. Could you give us just a brief capsule what this one covers?
Well, dolphins had come with the original colonists, but what with trying to find new quarters in the northern part of Pern that were safer from Threadfall, some of the dolphineering sort of got left out, and then a plague occurred about 100 years into the planet, their occupation of the planet, and many people died without passing on their professional skills. One of these skills was dolphineering. Well, the dolphins had a pact with mankind, which they kept. And so while the dolphins had tried to reestablish vocal communications with people, they didn't, except in very isolated incidents, until I decided to reintroduce them, as it were, into Pern society.
Okay. You've written a lot of books. Is it 25, 30 books?
No, 53. You're 53. Just reading one publisher's list.
Okay. 53 books. If you had to name a personal favorite.
Yes, The Ship of Sang.
What year did that come out?
That came out in 1969, I think.
Okay. And that's your all-time favorite?
So far.
All right. And you're out promoting all three of these books, you and Elizabeth Ann Scarborough. Her new book is The Godmother.
Yes, that's set in Seattle.
Okay. And they were all released last week, according to my information.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with our listeners here at WYSO.
Well, thank you very much for thinking of having me do so.
We wish you a lot of luck. Your tour is almost over, and then you're headed back to County Wicklow?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
And there you have it, my interview with Anne McCaffrey, recorded back in September of 1994. And that was the first author interview I ever did on WYSO. I've done a few since then in the book nook, and it was funny that afternoon. I was in the Memorial Union at our radio station. I just finished the interview with Anne McCaffrey. I was kind of recovering from it and hosting the music show, Afternoon Excursions, and the phone rang in the studio, and I answered it, and there was a woman on the line, and she said, yeah, she said, you just interviewed Anne McCaffrey. And I said, yeah, uh-huh, I did. And she said, well, I'm Elizabeth Ann Scarborough. I'm her co-author of that book that you just interviewed her about, and I demand equal time. So I did my second author interview on WYSO ever about 15 minutes after I finished my interview with Anne McCaffrey. So that was the beauty of live radio in those days. Apparently, Anne McCaffrey contacted Elizabeth Ann Scarborough and said, yeah, you know, you should call this guy up and demand equal time. So we did. We took care of that. And the rest is history. And Anne McCaffrey, I didn't know it when I interviewed her, was a notable author. She was born April 1926, and she died at the age of 85, November 2011. She was best known for her Dragon Riders of Pern series. She had a career almost half a century long writing books, and she was the first woman to win a Hugo Award for fiction, the first to win a Nebula Award. In 1978, her novel, The White Dragon, became one of the very first science fiction books to ever make it onto the bestseller list at the New York Times. In 2005, she was named a Grand Master by the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. And she could be a little prickly, as you might have noted during the interview, but it was pretty neat to talk to her because that's the only interview I ever had with Anne McCaffrey. In 1970, McCaffrey, who was an American citizen, immigrated to Ireland with her two younger children just a few weeks after she filed for divorce from her husband, Horace Wright Johnson. And in Ireland, she began her career. She had a tough time initially. She had moved there because they had recently exempted resident artists from income tax obligations. Her colleague, her fellow science fiction writer, Harry Harrison, had moved over there for exactly that reason. And she wrote and kind of struggled for a while financially until she hit her stride. She found a literary agent that helped her get her more exposure, and she really got on a roll and wrote a lot of books. And in 1971, she did her Dragon Quest, also two gothic novels for the Dell imprint, The Mark of Merlin and The Ring of Fear. And with that contract, she really got going. During the next few years, the family moved several times and had struggled to make ends meet, but she got along on her child care payments and some meager royalties until the checks started rolling in, and she was really cranking out the books. She was quoted in 2000 as saying, "I started writing science fiction in the late 50s, early 60s, when readership was predominantly male and their attitudes unreconstructed. Women began reading SF and fantasy, and by preference, women writers. My stories had themes and heroines they could and did relate to. I never had any trouble with editors and publishers. I had trouble getting male readers to believe I was serious and a good enough writer to interest them." Her first Pern story was called Where Search. It was published in 1967. The second one won the 1969 Nebula Award for Best Novella, Dragon Rider. She was the first woman to win the Hugo for fiction and the first to win a nebula. Anne McCaffrey, that was truly the best of the Book Nook. In fact, there was no Book Nook when I did that interview. I hadn't even decided to do an author interview show. But that was my first author interview ever, and you heard it on the Best of the Book Nook. Hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in tomorrow. We've had movie stars on the program over the years. Peter Ustinov, Charlton Heston, Janet Leigh. Well, tomorrow we're going to have an interview with a B-movie guy. He's written his second memoir at 10:30 tomorrow morning on Sunday. I'll be talking to Bruce Campbell. Don't miss that. It's the Book Nook on WYSO. Bruce Campbell, 10:30 tomorrow morning. Thanks, as always, for tuning in.